A brief history of the Holy Roman Empire. The Crusade begins without Frederick. Now, we're in a period of time with Frederick II where we're going to have off and on going back and forth about the Fifth Crusade. We're still going to have Albigensian Crusades. We're still going to have problems in Italy. So it's pretty messy, and I'm trying to make it all move smoothly. That's my intent. Not that the history of the Holy Roman Empire is smooth at any time. At any rate, the beginning of the Fifth Crusade. The date that Honorius had set for the crusade was September 1217. When it embarked, one crucial man was missing. Frederick II was not aboard the ships that set sail for the Middle East. He again promised to come as soon as he could, but in his place, mysterious letters were sent out. These letters, presumed to have been sent by members of Frederick's court, promised prophetic events to unfold in Palestine. They spoke of the victory of the Christians and of a great leader who would come and deliver Jerusalem into their hands. Some of the letters even professed to be from King David himself, promising to return to his home. Concerning these prophetic letters, one must consider several facts. First, it was not the year 1000 that apocryphal messengers predicted the end, but the year 1260. Based on the prophecy of 1260 days in Revelation, the medievals reinterpreted the days to equal years. Thus, the reign of the Antichrist was not the last 1260 days, but 1260 years. For many of them, the Antichrist was not an individual, but a system or a group of individuals. Under the tutelage of Innocent III, the teaching that a future pope would be the personal Antichrist was replaced with the theological innocuous view that the Antichrist represented Islam as a whole. Despite the fact that Islam had existed for less than 600 years, the idea was circulating that Christianity would envelop the globe, and the educated knew the world was round by 1260. Consequently, the Crusades had taken on a prophetic zeal. The passages of Revelations, interpreted allegorically, came to be seen as prophecies of the Crusade. These new letters were designed to assure the hope of the Crusaders, and perhaps, as often speculated, to make Frederick II into a prophetic figure himself. So the Crusaders took heart in these prophecies. In 1219, the siege of the Egyptian city of Damietta had already begun. Notice they're not in Palestine, they're in Egypt. At the mouth of the Nile, Damietta was a strategically important city. As often occurred in the Middle Ages, the siege went on for many months and the besieged were being starved out. Egypt had called for reinforcements from Syria, but the Prince of Damietta knew they would not arrive in time. In the meantime, Saint Francis of Assisi had arrived in Egypt in an attempt for peaceful surrender. The Prince Al-Kamil treated Francis with respect, but he left Egypt with no accord, although a brief truce was observed by both sides to allow them to lick their wounds. In October, Al-Kamil made a shocking offer. He declared that if the Crusaders would leave Egypt, Islam would surrender Jerusalem, Galilee, Bethlehem, and return the true cross, which is going to be hard since Saladin had destroyed it. Whether Al-Kamil could deliver these promises or not, the offer was staggering, and most Crusaders were more than willing to accept the generous terms, but the Cardinal Pelagius and the Patriarch of Jerusalem wouldn't accept it. They declared that no treaty could be made with the heathen. Moreover, some questioned the strategic reasons for the surrender. They believed that Jerusalem could not be held for long without also seizing certain strategic positions which the Muslims refused to surrender. Hence, they suspected that even if the Muslims surrendered Jerusalem, they could retake it easily enough. So the treaty was refused. In November of 1219, the city gates were opened to the Crusaders, who looked with shock upon the dead bodies strewn in the streets from disease and plague. It is said that only 3,000 of the original 80,000 residents survived. Egypt had called for reinforcements from Syria, but they had not arrived in time. Indeed, they might not have arrived in time to save Egypt at all, but for Frederick's delay. The Crusaders did not advance upon all of Egypt as they planned, for they decided to wait for Frederick's army. They were convinced that with his help, all Egypt and Palestine would fall. But when Frederick delayed, so did the Crusaders. As Damietta became to the Egyptian prince, so too would it become a prison for the Crusaders in time. Now, of course, one of the reasons going to Damietta and Egypt is because these were the people who were controlling the Middle East, and it was believed that if you went and captured their headquarters, that would make it a lot easier. There also would have been, by coming into Egypt, a little easier to get their supplies. Coming into Palestine, at Acre and then trying to march through all that land to get to Jerusalem with the long lines of communication and supplies would be difficult. They could be attacked from Egypt or they could be attacked from Syria. The other problem that they have is picking Damietta has its issues in that later crusades will run into a situation where, you know, the Nile floods every year. And initially, the crusaders had no idea that it did that. So you have situations where they will build siege equipment. The Egyptians will look out and go, what are these people doing? It's going to start flooding in 2 weeks. And then, of course, it would flood, destroy all their stuff, kill a whole bunch of people, and then they hadn't gone anywhere. So, and that will also be a problem for the people in Damietta because it's hard to get food to them. So there are a lot of issues that come in play at this particular point. But this is the beginning, shall we say, of the Fifth Crusade. The sources for this include The Germanic People, Their Origins, Expansion, and Culture by Owen. The Barbarian West, 400 to 1000 AD by Wallace Hadrill. History of the Barbarian Celts, Vandals, Sarmatians, Scythians, Goths, Huns, and Anglo-Saxons, and Attila and the Nomadic Hordes by Nicole and McBride. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.